I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. The most decorated American gymnast, Simone Biles, did the impossible last month by completing a double back flip with three twists at the U.S. Championships called the hardest move in the world. It was a thing of indescribable skill, beauty, and athleticism. There's a darker side to gymnastics that Biles says she has experienced, being sexually abused by USA Gymnastics physician Larry Nassar, who is believed to have manipulated and assaulted hundreds of girls with big dreams of becoming a champion. Here's Simone Biles speaking last month about how USA Gymnastics did not protect her from Nassar.
I don't know. It's hard to talk about. It's really hard to talk about. I just feel like, I don't know. I don't mean to cry, but it's just... it's hard coming here for an organization and having had them fail us so many times. And we had won gold. We've done everything that they asked us for, even when we didn't want to. And they couldn't do one damn job. You had one job. You literally had one job, and you couldn't protect us. And it's just really sad, because now every time I go to the doctor or training, I get worked on. It's like, I don't want to get worked on. But my body hurts. I'm 22, and at the end of the day, that's my fifth rotation, and I have to go to therapy. But it's just hard, and we try to work through it, but it'll take some time. I'm strong. I'll get through it, but it's hard.
That was Simone Biles. Our guest, Abigail Pesta, interviewed a number of gymnasts who, like Biles, said they've been abused by Nassar for her new book, The Girls, An All-American Town, A Predatory Doctor, and the Untold Story of the Gymnast Who Brought Him Down. At Nassar's trial, more than 150 gymnasts gave searing and courageous testimony, telling Nassar what he had done to them and how they felt about him. He was sentenced last year to 40 to 175 years in prison. Abigail Pesta joins us here in our Philadelphia studio. Later, I'll talk with former Olympic bronze medal gymnast and Nassar survivor Tasha Schweikert and her attorney Michelle Simpson Teagle. And Abigail Pesta, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you for having
me. You're welcome,
Marty.
And thank you for writing this book. I kept going back to the title, The Girls, because these are such accomplished young women who have done so much for a sport that they love, but they were 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds. 17
yes.
years old. These were girls.
They were. Some of them were toddlers when they met Larry Nassar. You know, he started volunteering at a gym in Michigan back in 1988, and these were kids from the local community, and yeah, some started when they were 5, 6, 7 years old. So these were little girls who grew up with him and who he preyed on.
He seems to be in a category by himself, just the sort of literally the sheer number of women, girls, who said that he had abused them. Help us understand, I guess, how he was able to do it for so long and get away with it.
Yes, well, that's what the women in this book really help people understand, because this went on for nearly 3 decades, and I talked to 25 survivors of his abuse from the very first to the very last. And, you know, the very first survivor is in her mid-40s. The very last is in her mid-teens. So they gave the full spectrum of his evolution from doctor to predator. And it was... there were so many factors. He figured out how to ingratiate himself to people in positions of power so he could move up and move forward. But he also figured out how to befriend kids and their families, how to groom the entire family, the entire community. There was a coach who many women told me they see him as a key enabler of this abuse.
This is Gettert?
Yes, John Gettert, because he worked with Nassar for nearly 30 years. And, you know, the women told me he created an abusive training environment where they were afraid to tell him they were injured because injuries were their fault. It meant they weren't concentrating, you know, so they were competing and training. One woman, Izzy Hutchins, told me she competed and trained with a broken leg and a broken elbow, you know, so they already felt brutalized by the time they got to Nassar. And then he would be there with open arms, let me help you. But another woman in the book, Sarah Taristia, who's probably Nassar's very first victim.
So this goes back to the 1980s.
Back in the late 80s. Yes, she says that Gettert saw her being abused and not only did he not tell authorities, but he made fun of her. She said he made fun of her breasts and the fact she had a lump on her chest from an injury, and he called it her third boob. So there were a lot of factors that enabled this to go on for so long.
There was also the Caroli Ranch, the mm-hmm. Carolis, known again for their, frankly, abusive treatment of these young, aspiring mm-hmm. gymnasts, creating a kind of atmosphere so that Larry Nassar, as many of them said, could be the good guy, the confidant, mm-hmm. the one that they could sort of confide their fears about.
Yes, these kids thought they were his friend. And that's what these women in the book also unveil, is that he didn't start out that way. He figured that out. He wasn't that nice to his very first targets.
In fact, that's what Sarah said. Right?
He was kind of mean, in fact. But he figured out that he could befriend the kids, and he would bring back gifts from the Olympics. And like you said, he was everywhere. He was volunteering at this gym in Michigan. He was working with the national gymnastics team at the Caroli Ranch, because that was the official training center. He was working with Olympic gymnasts there. He was working at Michigan State University. He was the team coach and doctor. And there was a clinic at Michigan State where he got his hands on people from across the community. So he was everywhere.
He called it the treatment, and I think we should be clear about what he did, or certainly mm-hmm. has been alleged to do. And this was something that he called the treatment. And according to many of these women, or all of these women, this is what he did to them. What did he do?
He penetrated them with his hands, and either vaginally or anally. And he told the girls it was a medical treatment. He said, if I touch one part of your body, it'll help another. He was an osteopath. And these were kids. And they were also, many of them, very isolated kids, because they were growing up in this brutal boot camp of a training environment, you know, in gymnastics. And they trusted him. He was the doctor, and they were taught to trust doctors, and he became the Olympic doctor. So then they felt honored that he was treating them. But what's interesting, too, is while a lot of kids didn't know they were being abused,
right,
some did, and some told, and this is devastating, but over the course of nearly 30 years, a number of young women and girls told coaches, counselors, the police. No one listened. They all believed Nassar.
Which tells us a lot. And whether mm-hmm. we're in a different environment, culture today, we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this abuse took place in front of parents, mm-hmm. in front of others, in public. I mean, the sort of brazenness of what he is alleged to have done is really just extraordinary.
Yes, as he evolved as a predator, the women told me how he figured out ways to ensnare them and ensnare their families. It's so, you know, this is why these stories are so powerful, because one of the ways he did that was to have a parent in the room while he was abusing the child, and he would block the parent's view, and he figured out that the child wouldn't say anything because probably, you know, the kid wouldn't know it was abuse, but also it's awkward, it's embarrassing. And then, you know, the child would think, well, my mom or dad's in the room, so it must be okay. And so many women told me that. And I spoke to some of the parents, too, who had been in the room. And, you know, these families are just devastated. These parents were involved. You know, you always hear that, oh, it must be the parents who are pushing their kids into this. All the women I talked to said they wanted this.
These are driven young women and girls.
And in some cases they said their parents wanted them to quit and they didn't want to. So, you know, there was one story, one of Nassar's very last survivors. She was 16 years old when I spoke with her, Autumn Blaney, and I met with her and her mom. And her mom, she was there. She was at the practices with Autumn. She was watching. She would go to the – Autumn started training at the Caroli Ranch. She had her eye on the Olympics, and her mom went there. Parents weren't allowed at the ranch, but she stayed
which
down the road.
Which is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and she would talk to her at night. They told their story because they wanted people to understand that, you know, this can happen to anyone, as Autumn said. Don't think it can't happen to you. It can, because my mom was involved. She was watching. She was there, and it happened. And, you know, that's where these stories are so helpful, because when you read them all over the decades, you see all the signs of a predator.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very similar story. Mm-hmm. I think that was also true with the trial of Larry Nassar and the testimony from more than 150 mm-hmm. of these gymnasts. Let me play Olympic medalist. This is Allie Reitzman, and she's testifying at Larry Nassar's sentencing hearing. This is January 2018.
Larry, you do realize now that we, this group of women you so heartlessly abused over such a long period of time, are now a force, and you are nothing. The tables have turned, Larry. We are here, we have our voices, and we are not going anywhere. And now, Larry, it's your turn to listen to me. There is no map that shows you the pathway to healing. Realizing that you are a survivor of sexual abuse is really hard to put into words. I cannot adequately capture the level of disgust I feel when I think about how this happened. Larry, you abused the power and trust I and so many others placed in you, and I am not sure I will ever come to terms with how horribly you manipulated and violated me.
And again, Allie Reitzman at the trial of Larry Nassar. Such powerful words. And I love the way she just kept saying, Larry, mm-hmm. you know, to get his attention and the world's attention, I think, too.
Yeah, it was such a cathartic moment, you know, for these women to stand up and confront him. But also, you know, that I think that was just the beginning of the journey, though, you know, because everyone who I talked to just described how after that, there was, you know, acceptance, confronting him. That was the beginning, and then began the nightmares, the flashbacks, the self-blame, the guilt. I mean, you know, this is what predators do to people, and that's what they're all dealing with now. You know, like Sarah Turisti, the very first survivor, she told me she's still wrestling with the idea that it was her fault. She thinks, you know, she thinks back to when she was a kid falling from the balance beam. There was an instant in the air when she thought, I should have adjusted myself to land better. And then she thought, no, I'll be fine landing in this pit of foam blocks. And she broke her sternum. And that angered her coach. And that sent her into the doctor's lair. And she looks back and she thinks, that was my fault. I shouldn't have let up. You can never let up. Now she's in her 40s. She's got her family. She's raising her own kids. Rationally, she knows it's not her fault. But, you know, psychologically, she just can't quite wrap her head around it. So that's the kind of struggles now that, you know, these certain women are dealing with in the wake of this.
We're almost up in a break here, but this quest for perfection, really. I mean, that's when you see these gymnasts perform, it is perfection. It mm-hmm. looks like perfection, or you certainly have to think that way to be able to operate at that level.
Yes, and a lot of the women told me, too, how as kids, like once they got it, you know, once they started out and they started to excel, they just wanted to get better and better and achieve more and more. And so, you know, with their coaches pushing them, you know, diabolically, they kept going. Like they wanted that. And but they also described it as like a kind of brainwashing, you know, because they were so young and they would do anything to please the coach. And when the coach was telling them, it's your fault if you're injured, you know, the coach is yelling at them, berating them, it does real damage.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Abigail Pesta. She's got a new book. It's called The Girls, An All-American Town, A Predatory Doctor, and the Untold Story of the Gymnast Who Brought Him Down. That predatory doctor is in prison. His name is Larry Nassar. We're going to take a very short break, and then we've got a couple of guests waiting in the wings for more of this conversation. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Tasha Schweikert is a former Olympic bronze medal gymnast, a world champion gymnast, a Larry Nassar survivor, and a lawyer. She and her sister, Jordan Schweikert, wrote the foreword to Abigail Pesta's book about how they first did not believe the accusations against Nassar, that he'd been sexually abusing gymnasts like them under his care. In time, though, they realized that he had sexually abused them, too, and saw how he groomed young girls like them by being the, quote, good guy, the one who cared. Tasha Schweikert and her sister have filed a civil lawsuit against the U.S. Olympic Committee and USA Gymnastics for enabling Nassar, preventing him, or should I say, failing to prevent him from abusing his young patients. Tasha Schweikert joining us by telephone. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Also, you're very welcome. And also with us is Schweikert's attorney, Michelle Simpson-Teagle. And Michelle, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well. All right, well, we will figure that out. But Tasha, we have you, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's great. Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. As I said, it took you a while, and I think also reading Abigail Pesta's book, it took a lot of these young gymnasts a while to kind of figure out what Larry Nassar was doing to them. What has that process been like for you?
Oh, man, it was a long process to even just comprehend what had happened. You know, when the abuse started happening, my sister and I were very young, and we had no context of what being sexually abused meant, what being inappropriately touched even means. You know, he was our doctor. We were both national team gymnasts. I was an Olympian, and he told us that his treatments were going to fix us, and as young gymnasts, you know, you just want to be healthy so you can get back on the floor and train. And so, you know, with my sister with her back injury and me with my groin injury, he told us that the treatments would fix us and would get us back out on the floor. And, you know, finding out now that it was just complete manipulation and sexual abuse.
I mean, that's got to be really hard for anybody to really come to terms with, to realize, you know, as an adult that you had been abused as a child. That's got to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, it was devastating. It was, you know, initially I thought, like, me, like, I'm a smart person, and I feel like, you know, just as an athlete, I was a very strong personality and persona, and so I almost felt like I was impermeable. So to think that someone could break me down and manipulate me into, you know, leading me on to think that he was treating me when he was really just using me for his own sexual gratification, it was really traumatizing, and it took a lot of therapy and a lot of self-help to, you know, get to a point where I could even talk about it.
Well, I appreciate you talking about it, and I realize it's not an easy thing to do, but I also think it's just so helpful for us to understand how this happened. I mean, the sort of level of his predatory behavior is just so breathtaking. Abigail Pesta and I were talking about these coaches and how tough they were. You were at the Caroli Ranch, you and your sister, and you described how you didn't like being there, and I can certainly understand that.
Yeah, it was a very toxic environment. You know, it was almost like survivor, like, or survival of the fittest, the last man standing. But when you're dealing with children, you know, you can't treat them like that. The workouts were beyond the point of just like being hard, because we're all elite gymnasts. We're the top gymnasts in the country. Of course, the gymnastics is going to be hard, but they kind of took it to another level where it became abusive. We were, our voices were stifled. We weren't really allowed to communicate our feelings. If we were in pain, we were, most of the gymnasts there on the national team tried to hide it, because if the staff knew that you were injured, you were either sent in a back gym, you kind of had no use for them, and they were the direct people who were picking the teams for the World Championships and the Olympics and all the international competitions. So you would do anything to show that you weren't injured or to hide it. And so the moment anything started hurting, you were sent to Larry to get it fixed. And he was supposed to fix it as quick as he could and get you back on the floor so you could keep training. So it was just a very abusive environment. And additionally, you know, we weren't fed properly. The coaches would go through our bags in our rooms to make sure we didn't have food, or if we did have food, they'd take the food. So just a lot of abusive factors that went into creating this toxic environment where Larry was able to, you know, be the best friend, say, oh, here, I know you're hungry, let me get you food. You know, you can tell me all your problems. The moment you walked in the training room and the door shut, he was like open ears, and he created this place where he all of us believed that we could trust him and we could tell him our deepest secrets. And that's where the grooming started. And when he knew that he was able to get close to us, and when he knew that we trusted him, that's when he started the abuse.
You talk about a kind of brainwashing. That's something actually Abigail was mentioning earlier from a number of the women that she had interviewed about feeling as if they had been brainwashed. Did you feel that way as well, Tasha?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, being an elite gymnast and being at the top, USA Gymnastics made us feel like if you weren't the best and you didn't meet the Olympic team or you weren't at the top, then you kind of meant nothing, right? So I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I think we all were. You know, we all wanted to achieve our dream of making the Olympics. But when you're put in that situation at such a young age, you're absolutely drinking the Kool-Aid as to, you know, I'm going to train through injuries. I'm going to, you know, do exorbitant amount of routines, even if it means, like, injuring myself. I'm going to do everything they tell me. And if you know, only eating half of my dinner looks good and makes them think that, like, I'm in control of my weight, then that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to starve myself. So absolutely, we were all drinking the Kool-Aid. I know I was drinking the Kool-Aid, and it was what created a toxic environment for Larry to be able to abuse all of us.
Can you also say it also got you to the Olympics? You're an Olympic bronze medal gymnast.
You know, I do have an Olympic bronze medal, but as a 34-year-old adult today, I will say that there's not one way to success, right? I mean, all of the abuse, the sexual abuse from Larry, the mental and emotional and physical from USA Gymnastics and their staff, that is not what made us all successful, right? We are a group of talented gymnasts. We work really hard. I believe that there's a healthy way to do it. I believe there's a healthy way to coach athletes to make sure they have adequate nutrition and they're eating and their injuries are being addressed properly. You know, it's not abuse and medals or let's be healthy and then, you know, we're not going to be successful. But it's just not one way or the other. I know there's a better way to do it.
Let me just reintroduce you both, and I know Abigail wants to say something. That's Tasha Schweikert. She's a former Olympic bronze medal gymnast, a world champion gymnast. She's a lawyer. She's a Larry Nassar survivor. And we're talking about what it was like to compete as a young girl. Obviously, she did very well, but seems that there's a price that she and many other young female gymnasts played as well. And she wrote the foreword to Abigail Pesta's book. It's called The Girls, An All-American Town, A Predatory Doctor, and The Untold Story of the Gymnast Who Brought Him Down, that doctor being Larry Nassar. Let me just give out the phone number because I'm sure folks want to join our conversation. It's 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions or comments? Abigail, go ahead.
Tasha, hi. Hi. I remember you said before you started training at the Caroli Ranch when you and Jordan were really young.
Your sister.
That you had a really good coach who, you know, had positive reinforcement and encouraged you instead of berating you and discouraging you. And those were in your early, early years. And I remember you said that it was so shocking when you got to the ranch and had, you know, this abusive coaching. But what you were just saying about how there is a healthy, positive way. When you first started out, you had that in your coach, right?
Tasha, go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, Cassie Rice, the owner of Jim Katz Gymnastics, where I trained in Las Vegas, Nevada, with my sister, she was great. You know, she was a college gymnast herself, very positive. You know, training at my hometown in Jim Katz and then going to the ranch, traveling to the ranch once a month, I always hated going to the ranch, and I couldn't wait to get back to Jim Katz to train because it was just night and day. You know, we had hard trainings, and there were times when, you know, she had to push us mentally, but it wasn't to the point of breaking us down and, like, completely abusing us. But when we went to the ranch, it was, like, toxic abuse, you know, pushing through injuries, which wasn't safe at all. So, of course, you know, Cassie through her own coaching and our training at Gymcats, was able to get me and my sister to, you know, the highest level of the sport. So I just believe there's a better way. It can be done, and it doesn't have to be all abusive.
And Tasha, the Crowley Ranch has been shut down, correct? Tasha?
Yes, they are no longer, the National Team Training Center is no longer at the Crowley Ranch. I believe that they are looking for a new training facility site, a permanent one.
Let me play another testimony. This is from 15-year-old gymnast Emma Ann Miller, possibly Larry Nassar's final abuse survivor. She's testifying at his sentencing hearing. This is January 2018.
I have never wanted to hate someone in my life. But my hate towards you was uncontrollable. Larry Nassar, I hate you. I will work on forgiving you, as I know that is what God wants. But at this moment, I will leave forgiveness up to him. There is one thing you could do to help with the forgiveness. Instead of just sitting there acting weak and feeble, you could start writing down each and every time MSU, Twist Stars, and USAG could have stopped you. And instead of getting up at your sentencing, giving some hollow, insincere apology, you could outline all the times for me, for us, that MSU, Twist Stars, and USAG should have stopped you.
Tasha, let me go back to you. You and your sister filed a civil suit against the U.S. Olympic Committee, the USA Gymnastics, essentially for enabling Larry Nassar, failing to prevent him from abusing his young patients. And again, this is another theme that we hear in some of this testimony and a theme that runs through Abigail Pesta's book. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, you know, similar to the testimony we just heard, there were several times that Larry should have been stopped. You know, there was an email from the former USA Gymnastics president when I was competing, Bob Colarossi. He sent an email to the Olympic Committee stating that there was an abuse problem in our sport and we needed help. Nothing was done about it. And, there were no further investigations into that email. Like, what is the problem? What are we doing? You know, when we were at the national team training camp, after practices, most of the coaches and the national staff would host some type of a dinner at the Carolis, where a lot of the coaches were involved in, you know, drinking. And all of us gymnasts were put in Larry's care and control for the remainder of the night, right? Mm-hmm. So he had full access to come into our room to do what he called quote-unquote treatments with no oversight from anyone else. So
while they were essentially partying,
I don't know what is.
Right. I mean, essentially, while this was going on to you and other the gymnasts, there was partying going on down the hall.
Yes, yes, yes. No one was there. You know, no other adults were in our rooms. You know, overseeing what Larry was doing. Nothing. He had just the green light to walk into anyone's room and do treatment, and he scheduled treatments for, you know, sometimes 2 to 3 hours. After our practices into the evening. So there was, you know, two to three hours of access to all of us gymnasts to where he could fully abuse us and no one would know. So again, there were several times, several red flags where people should have been asking questions and looking, and that just didn't happen.
Tasha, let me ask you about something. This is Steve Penny, was the head of USA Gymnastics, and he asked you to write about your quote-unquote positive experiences with Nassar and USA Gymnastics. You refused to say anything positive about Nassar, but you did give a statement about you too, about USA Gymnastics, saying essentially as a member of the team from 1999 to 2004, I firmly believe USA Gymnastics always had my health and well-being at the top of their mind, and you go on from there. Can you talk about, I guess, the kind of pressure you felt to write that?
Yeah, you know, from the time I was 8 years old, I was, you know, in the USA Gymnastics system as a tops athlete, and then climbed my way to the national team ranks. and then to the Olympic ranks. So just throughout all of that, and like I was saying earlier, in terms of the brainwashing, I felt like I owed my entire career to USA Gymnastics. I felt like they made me the Olympian who I was, the athlete who I was. Without them, I felt like I was nothing. And quite frankly, you know, for so long, up until only recently, I was terrified of them in terms of I felt like I could never speak bad about them, you know, as similar to, you know, an abused woman who is scared to face her, you know, her abuser, her abusive husband and come out and speak honestly. You know, I was scared to say anything negative about the USA Gymnastics organization because I felt like I owed my career to them. So when he approached me at a very vulnerable time in my life, and out of the blue, because I hadn't spoken to him for a very long time, and I remember picking up the phone and talking to him, and again, like, the 9-year-old little me kind of came out, and he asked me to make a statement, and I just said yes, because I didn't know what else to do because of that feeling like I could never speak bad about the organization because I owed my career to them.
You do have this lawsuit. We're almost out of time here, Tasha. I mean, do you believe that gymnastics can reform itself, can become a more humane place for young girls like you were?
You know, I hope so. I think USA Gymnastics and the U.S. Olympic Committee have to do some cleaning of house, some real cleaning. They need to get rid of everybody who is still there, who even had a foot in what was going on. Anyone who knew anything needs to be gone. I think they completely need to overhaul all of their policies and procedures to make sure athlete safety is top priority. And I think they also need to change the culture, right? It shouldn't be all about winning and medals and money and marketing dollars. Athlete safety and well-being needs to come first. So I think until they do that, we're not going to see a real change.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us, and I know it's not an easy conversation to have, but as I said earlier, Tasha Schweikert, I really appreciate you joining us and telling us this very important story. Thanks so much.
Thank you for giving me a platform to tell my story. I appreciate it.
No problem. That's Tasha Schweikert. She's a former Olympic bronze medal gymnast, a world champion gymnast. She is a Larry Nassar survivor. She's also a lawyer. Our guest, Abigail Pesta, staying with us for the rest of the hour. More on her book, The Girls, An All-American Town, A Predatory Doctor, and The Untold Story of the Gymnast Who Brought Him Down. 1-888-477-9499. Radio Times at WHYY.org, and we'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. Our guest Abigail Pesta has said that physician Larry Nassar is really the most prolific sex criminal in American sports history. Her book is called The Girls, and it's based on interviews with gymnasts who testified, many of them, against Nassar, helped to put him behind bars. The book begins when Larry Nassar actually begins by targeting these young girls, these aspiring athletes. You can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Do you think, based on the interviews that you have done, that gymnastics can reform itself? Tasha's saying, you know, they need to clean house.
Yeah, I mean, the women I talked to said there's a long way to go. You know, there was a coach, Valerie Condos Field, the UCLA coach, and she's a renowned coach. She told me, you know, these kids, when they start the sport and they meet their coach, the coach is their god, and they'll do anything for that coach. And so that's why it's so important to have responsible people in those positions. And she also said something interesting about how we as a society can think about, you know, what we're telling our kids is important. She said, you know, at home, when your kids come home after a game, you can ask them, instead of, did you win, how did you perform? Do you feel good about your performance? What did you learn? She said, because we place so much value on winning, it's something that we can think about ourselves. She grew up in dance, and she said the focus was not on winning, but on performance. And mm-hmm. that's the message she gave her athletes. And I think that's important.
Let me play one more clip. And this is Lindsay Lemke, former Michigan State University gymnast. She's giving testimony at Larry Nassar's sentencing hearing. Again, this is January 2018. She's also addressing Lou Anna Simon, the former president of Michigan State University. Let's give it a listen.
You're a coward, too. You say you aren't responsible for this. I wish you would come up to this podium and be half as brave as all of us have had to be the past year and a half. To be brave enough to be a public survivor and a competing athlete of your university who let me down. To be brave enough to come up here and confidently tell us the reasons why you don't think that you are responsible. I love gymnastics so much. I loved gymnastics. I still wore a Michigan State University leotard for an entire season to compete for your school while you sat back and denied these accusations and basically called me a liar. Well, I'm here to tell you, Luana Simon, Larry Nassar, John Getter, and Kathy Klagas, I had the best and most rewarding year of competition of my 17 years of gymnastics. None of you stopped me. I won, and I defeated all of you.
Again, another powerful but also searing testimony from one of these young gymnasts.
Yes, Lindsay Lemke. I first met her pretty early on in the Nassar scandal. It was just a few months after his arrest. And it was so interesting because, yes, she was a gymnast at Michigan State, and she was one of the first women to publicly identify herself as a survivor. And I met her and her mom, and I thought it was so interesting because, number one, they told me they felt like they were being blamed. You know, here they were dealing with the realization that this trusted doctor had abused Lindsay hundreds of times. And you know, they're coming to this realization. They were having a hard time wrapping their head around it. And then they said people they knew on Facebook, acquaintances, friends, were saying, why didn't the parents know? Why didn't the kids tell? No one understood, and they were blaming them. And it was so interesting to see over the next couple of years, Lindsay and her mom, they just emerged as such a force for survivors, as you can hear in Lindsay's voice.
Absolutely.
There. And, you know, when I met them, they had just come to grips with the fact that this was true. Lindsay, in the beginning, when the allegations first came out against Nassar, she didn't want to believe they were true, even though he had done it to her. She
sort of like Tasha was telling us earlier.
Yeah, just couldn't see it. And, you know, he got arrested for possessing tens of thousands of images of child pornography. And I think that helped a lot of people realize, okay, this is true.
In fact, that was sort of the thing that broke this open, the fact that he had so much child pornography, that he left, what, on the street to be
picked up by the trash? He tried to throw out his computer, his hard drive, but the police investigation had already begun because some gymnasts had come forward. And you know, luckily the trash collectors hadn't come yet, and the police found this child pornography in his trash can.
An email from Cynthia. She says, I, like many others, watch our gymnasts perform and represent our country during the Olympics, completely ignorant of what some go through in order to achieve the chance of Olympic glory. I have a young daughter myself, and this is so very heartbreaking to hear. And it is, I mean, I think, having watched some of this over the weekend, you begin to see it differently. I mean, there's Simone Biles doing these extraordinary things. I mean, clearly an incredibly gifted athlete who loves the sport, but you just think there is this dark side.
I know. In fact, when I went to the gym in Lansing, Michigan, where Larry Nassar and John Gettert had worked together for nearly 30 years, you know, Gettert retired.
This is the coach.
Yeah, the coach. He retired. But his wife is still running the gym, and I went and I saw kids there, and I thought, if I had seen these kids, there were young girls in their leotards and their ponytails, and they looked so excited and so enthused. And if I had been there a few years ago, I would have thought, how cool. And here I was looking at them, and I just had this dark feeling. But that's where there's power in these stories that these women told me, because whether it's gymnastics or any sport, their stories help parents and kids know what to watch out for and, recognize the signs of a predator and talk about it, you know, to know that they can talk about it with their families. Because, you know, a lot of these kids, they just didn't talk with their parents about what was going on. They thought it was the norm. They didn't know anything else. You know, they thought this is just how it is.
And it does all seem to coincide with the Me Too movement, with other, I mean, more older in certain ways, more even more high-profile people coming out and accusing well-known people of sexually abusing them. Do you see this as sort of part of this larger story?
Yes, this happened. It was before the Me Too movement, but I think it really, you know, it was leading into it because what happened is back in 2016, late 2016, the Indianapolis Star newspaper ran an expose about abuse in gymnastics, and it was about how USA Gymnastics had covered up reports of abuse against coaches. And, you know, like I said, young women and girls were reporting Nassar for almost 30 years, and no one was listening. But this time, people were more inclined to listen, and a gymnast named Rachel Den Hollander called the paper and said a doctor had abused her, and then two more gymnasts called. And one of them was Jessica Howard, and she spoke to me about that, too. So these women called the paper. The paper started an investigation, ran a story, and then other women started coming forward. And this time, I think because people were starting to gain an understanding, you know, of sexual abuse and of listening to women and girls, police took action. Two times in the past, they had not, you know. And so this time people listened, thankfully.
At the trial, I mean, Nassar did plead guilty to a number of counts of sexual abuse or sexual assault, but he also seemed to defend himself.
He did. He pleaded guilty. And then, you know, amid the sentencing hearings, when all the women were standing up and confronting him, he wrote a letter to the judge, Judge Aquilina, saying, actually, he's not guilty, but he pleaded guilty because he didn't want to put his family and the community through the pain of a trial. So he defended himself. He said he was a good doctor. And he said the media had convinced these women that he had done something wrong. And then he said, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. So, wow. You know, you think, well, did he really believe that he was doing something good? And, you know, when you hear the stories of these women in this book, you see what a master manipulator he was.
To the bitter end, I guess.
Yeah, he was a master manipulator. He figured out all the ways, you know, like having the parent in the room during the abuse. He texted the girls, you know, liked their Facebook and Instagram posts. He really figured out how to be their friend. He wouldn't bill the family's health insurer because he said he saw such potential in their child. And then the families looked back and realized, oh, God, here they thought, wow, this Olympic doctor, he's not going to bill our insurer because he sees such potential. And then they realized, oh, geez, he wasn't billing the insurer because there would be no medical records. No one could see what he was doing. So he truly was a master manipulator.
Predator as good guy, right? Mm-hmm. Which is even more unsettling in certain kinds of ways.
It's really chilling. And, you know, there's a story that is so... It's such the perfect example of how manipulative he was. There was a young woman. She was 6 years old. She was a neighbor. She wasn't a gymnast. She was a family friend who he started abusing in the basement, Kyle Stevens. And she realized when she was 12 that he was abusing her because she had read about the Catholic priest scandal, and a friend had told her she had been abused, and she put it together, and she talked to her parents. And she said in her court testimony that Nassar came to the house, sat down with her and her parents, and said to her, you know, of course this didn't happen, but if someone does abuse you, if someone does touch you that way, then you should tell someone. That's what she was doing. She was telling someone. And, you know, he was telling this 12-year-old girl, no, you know, this didn't happen, but if it did, you should tell someone. That, to me, says so much about his manipulation.
I mean, talk about a head game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
Now, he was beaten up in prison. I think he's been transferred to a different prison for his own self-protection.
Right, yeah, I read about that.
Tell us about the judge, because she allowed, and we played some of this testimony during the hour, she allowed, what, more than 150 women, girls, to testify, which seems extraordinary.
It was such an extraordinary moment. Judge Aquilina, we need more judges like her because she let these women stand up. She gave them as much time as they needed. She spoke with each one of them individually after they spoke. And, you know, that's what made the case personal. It had been in the headlines for some time, but it wasn't until the women stood up and people saw their faces and names, and that's what made it personal. And, you know, but also at the same time, it was such a big deal because these women were putting themselves out there. And as they told me, you know, to do that means everyone knows something about them before they even meet them. You know, if they go to a job interview and the boss Googles them, they know this. If they go on a date and they're, you know, the date Googles them, they know this. Their kids, they'll have to figure out when to tell their kids because now it's on the internet. So it was a very big deal for those women to stand up and confront him in court. And but, you know, also at the same time, it was just, it was such a trailblazing moment, and it just, it became personal then.
Do you think they were more willing to talk to you because of the trial and the verdict, that somehow that they were in another chapter in their life?
Well, you know, what was interesting was a lot of them told me they really feel dismissed and unheard, and because they're not famous, or because they didn't even realize until the women stood up in court that they too had been abused. You know, the very first victim, Sarah Teresti, she was one who didn't realize until the women stood up. She had repressed these memories for decades. She had tried to talk to a college counselor and had been dismissed. And then she put these memories away. And so she saw them and, you know, just started, saw the women and just started having, you know, these memories started coming back, and it was just a nightmare. You know, so a lot of them who I talked to told me they felt like their stories hadn't been heard. And these, so many of them are the ones who grew up with Nassar at this small town gym, some, you know, some from the time they were toddlers. So they had such profound insight to share. And they did so. What motivated all of them was the idea that they could use their own painful experience to help other families avoid this. And that's where there's such power in their stories.
Kristen emails, some people see the issue of believing victims without a trial is unfair to the accused. How do we solve the problem of accused rights versus a victim story with no physical evidence? But what we have in this story is just this repeated story of women that didn't necessarily know each other, just telling it over and over and over again. But can you speak to that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is there any question about Larry Nassar?
I would say no, absolutely not. I mean, because, you know, he even did videos of this so-called treatment that he was doing. You know, he was doing it. There's just no question. It's, you know, he's even got himself on video doing it. He was penetrating young girls under the guise of medical treatment, and you know, the medical experts roundly say this was not a medical treatment. Now, there is a kind of an obscure kind of treatment that sometimes you can use for infertility problems or digestive problems. You know, there's a very obscure kind, you know, treatment that can be used in certain circumstances. But you would, if you did that, you would do it with the patient's consent. You would, if you did it with a minor, you would have a parent's consent, and you would use gloves, and you would have another person in the room. He didn't do any of this. So, no, there's no question that what he did was sexual abuse.
We're almost out of time here, but this, you have an interest in girls and injustice.
Yes, I've spent my career writing about women fighting back against crime and injustice. And, you know, that's why this story was so important for me and just so powerful, because these women who I met, you know, for them to place their trust in me, for one thing, meant everything to me. And like I said, I could see the reason they were doing it was to help other people. And so to be a part of that, to be able to help get that message out there, you know, it means so much to me. And I appreciate your helping spread the word, too, because these stories need to be heard.
Well, it's such an important story. I don't think we totally understand it yet. And we have done stories in the past about this and just trying to understand the kind of the scale, the scope of what happened. Abigail Pesta, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. The book is called The Girls. an all-American town, a predatory doctor, and the untold story of the gymnast who brought him down. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen, with help today from Xavier Lopez. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.